First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Gentlemen, man, that was an abrupt cutoff, wasn't it? I tell you what, you use that little slider and sometimes it has a mind of its own. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Ed Springsteen Show, brought to you by the MVM Radio Network, home of LouisvillePolitics.com. I am your host, Ed Springsteen, along with, as always, Mr. Ed Martin. How are you?
All right, Mr. Springsteen.
And joining us, as we announced last night, is one of our new co-hosts, Mr. John. How are you, sir?
Beautiful as always.
Yeah, beautiful as always. I know better. I know what you look like, man. I tell you, it's been a busy few days for me trying to catch up, and I apologize to you guys once again. I know last week, I apologize to last night's audience, and I apologize to tonight's audience. Last week, I had just gotten home from the hospital. I was rushed there Friday night with a heart attack, and anyway, there was some miscommunication somewhere, but you guys did not get a live show Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of last week. So I want to apologize to the nice audience for that. We have worked all of that out. I will be taking a slight leave. I won't be as active with the radio show for the next couple of weeks because I have to heal. And so last night and today, we're going to bring John in and let John and Mr. Martin get acquainted. Is that all right with you guys?
Oh, I guess, you know. Are you going to double my salary for having to put up with him?
I've already met him once. He's like 8 foot tall and 450 pounds, so, I mean, I know better than say
yeah,
no
but,
to
him. I need a doubling of my salary. That's,
all right, man. I mean, how many zeros do you need on your check? How many more zeros do you need on your check, man? I'll give you all you want, you know.
well, I mean, if it starts with a zero, then I'm...
No. Well, that's usually where it starts at. That's where it's always started at, you know. We do this. We make a little bit of money, but not enough for paychecks, but we'll get there eventually. I tell you, Ed, you know, we've got a lot of things going on. As everybody knows by now, I am not a big fan of Louisville Metro Police, as I used to be. You know, these guys illegally arrested me in July of 2012. And it pretty much destroyed a lot of my life over one stupid arrest. It cost me a job for 18 months and all kinds of crazy stuff. And, you know, I'm not very pleased with that. Well, I tell you what, it doesn't surprise me one bit, but we have another story coming out today from another Louisville Metro Police officer who is completely screwed up. He was indicted yesterday for bilking the taxpayers out of more than $10,000 in phony overtime claims. Christopher Thurman is a 37-year-old officer who works in DUI enforcement. He was charged with official misconduct and theft by deception. He's facing up to 10 years in prison if he's found guilty. You know, this article is in the Courier Journal. You can read it there. But, you know, Ed, this is yet another example. You know, we had the cases of Crystal Marlowe with this case here. We had the cases of even corrections officers allowing people to get killed while in the prisons we talked about last night. Is there a systemic problem with these police officers where they just flat out think they're the law?
I don't think it's systemic. I think, you know, far and away most cops are good, but I think what we run up against is you end up with a police department that is sort of like the federal government. They get big enough, they get involved enough, and at least for a while, you know, the administration doesn't realize they're getting gamed. You know, there's just too many employees, too many things, too many departments, too many issues, and then the occasional officer figures that out. They figure out that, hey, you know what, the management is so busy doing this, that, or the other, and not just doing police work and, you know, employee management, and they realize they can game the system. It's just, I think it's just as much as anything, it's just a system that's too large, too many precincts. The thin blue line probably comes into play some. But, yeah, I just think it's actually percentage-wise, a very small percentage of cops have, just like any other, any politician, any government employee, any private sector employee, they figure out that, you can make a little extra money, and it's sort of an incentive there because whatever your pay is, that also goes towards your pension. So get in there and have some, you know.
I don't think
they don't. I see a lot of cases. I don't think they get paid enough. So, you know, that's another thing that's going to lead to people gaming the system like that.
Well, see, there's a few things that go along with it as well. I would agree with that to a large extent. I would have to. Another thing that goes with it is, it's almost like the military. Like you said, when you look at it from a federal level, the troops do what the troops are told to do. I mean, that's just the way it is. And when police force gets so large, they're almost like a small army to that extent. I mean, it's the amount of money, the amount of resources, the amount of time, the different departments. You've got so many different people in charge of so many different things. Oversight is almost impossible in so many cases that you get guys like this, a small amount of, you know, they are a small amount of the entire police force, but they get away with a lot more than they should. I don't think this is as sad as this is theft anymore. When you look at the police department, it's such a smaller part of what's going on with everything. But this is $10,000 that he cost everybody. I mean, he should go to jail. He should, you know, do his time, whatever.
Well, the thing for me though, here you've got yet another officer, you know, pickpocketing the taxpayers based on phony claims. You've got idiots like Dustin Hinckley and Brandon Wood who arrested me and made up phony charges, you know, that cost the city a little bit of money. You know, and when you talk about the pay that this guy gets, you know, Thurman made a base salary of roughly $49,750 in 2011. All right, he submitted in 2011 overtime claims worth more than $27,000.
Okay.
When you add in the incentives and all the other stuff that go along with it, Thurman was paid more than $91,000 in 2011. In 2012, he was paid $92,000. He got a raise in 2013 to $52,000 and still claimed more than $20,000 in overtime. And I guess what I'm getting at here is this. You know, it's not just their base pay.
That's a lot more than the $10,000 I
originally thought. Well, it is. You know, and the $10,000, I mean, the thing for me is, when you have police out there making a phony charges because they got some kind of a hard on that night and somebody challenged them or something, that's one thing that's bad enough. You're taking taxpayer money and you're putting people in jail and stuff that's costing the taxpayer money for nothing. But then you've got the clear abuses of taxpayer money with Officer Thurman, who is out there, who has cost us thousands of dollars in false accounts. And to be quite honest with you, Thurman's not alone. He's going to be the guy that they're going to use as the example. But I can tell you right now, Thurman is not the only one who is turning in false overtime.
Yeah,
I know this to be true.
That's the only part that I would disagree with that on the small, this being a small percentage. To an extent, it's a small percentage that generally do the bigger things, the more important things that we pay attention to. But I think the entire police department, they'll throw somebody to the wolves to save their own necks. At this point, it's just gotten, it's so big. There's so many people. I don't think anybody even knows the rules. I think half these cops go into this without the real training they need in the first place to be able to make intelligent decisions. And as we talked about yesterday, a good majority of them are turned down if they're too intelligent. So it's a lot of them are stupid, stupid in that sense. They don't want people with high IQs. So when you look at all that, it's a bigger problem than anybody can really give it credit for, because there's no way to really track it. There's no way to judge it. These are the people that are supposed to enforce law, and they're going to protect their own in most cases. So there's no real way, even if with internal affairs and all these other groups, there's no real way to keep an eye on them on the whole.
I would say one other thing is, and where the department management, you know, as we try to be nice to them here, I'd say one of the questions that comes into play is, this guy was like I guess if he were an employee, he'd be a top performer. He really racked up the convictions, racked up the arrest, and in so doing, probably generated a lot of revenue. So you got to wonder at some point, you know, how far the investigation's going to go. Is it because this guy was out there bringing in the DUIs, you know, just he apparently, you know, on the news and everything, he won awards from the governor for you know, I guess you could say, and for lack of a better term, he was out there rounding them up. He was out there bringing in the business. So you got to wonder at some point if how far the investigation will go, how honest they'll be, and if we find out that maybe somebody turned and looked the other way and said, hey, you know, this guy's bringing in like $250,000 worth of fines every year. Cut him some slack, or maybe even look at him and say, hey, just round the clock a little bit. It makes you wonder.
Well, there's a lot more to it than this, too, though, because this guy was in charge of DUIs and everything else. I mean, there's going to be dozens of criminal DUI cases now that are going to be reopened for investigation, and a lot of those may actually be thrown out, you know, because this guy's already, if he's proven to be a thief and a liar, then, you know, a lot of these DUI felony cases or criminal cases can actually be thrown out. A good defense attorney would immediately point out, you know, the problems with this guy being a thief and a liar. And if that's the case, then any testimony he gave in these criminal cases that he testified in are now subject to that. So now we've wasted more taxpayer money by doing the criminal convictions and everything else based on a guy we can't trust that he's supposed to be a cop. You know, and here's the interesting thing here, too. One thing that really caught my eye when I read this article with Courier is the police department figured all this out last fall, okay? And Thurman was actually reassigned to paid desk duty last October. So for 4 months now, he's still been getting paid with our tax dollars. It took him this long to finally do an indictment. It doesn't take 4 months to do an investigation, especially on payroll records. So this has all been a slow process to save him as much as they can anyway. Go ahead.
Well, guys like this, they also, I can't point direct fingers for obvious reasons, but guys like this, they also get into situations where you have out in Bullitt County and other places, they've had big, you know, drug deals. And this kind of ties into, I guess, somewhat marijuana and hemp, which is going on. You know, it's national right now. You have guys that get busted with, you know, $2 million of whatever product, be it pills or marijuana, et cetera. And by the time they get to court, they get some form of a slap on the wrist. They get this giant reduced sentence, and they only get busted for half of that, for $1 million. And it's, you know, they do take money from bust and things like that. You know, when they get a large bust, and there's a few people that get paid. The person they busted gets a slap on the wrist if it's their first offense, whatever, or sometimes even their second offense, and further than that. And they continue to perpetuate, you know, that it's putting people in prison for profit. It's over and over again. And guys like this, especially when they're already crooked enough to do what they're doing in this sense, where he's making tens of thousands of dollars off the taxpayers. You have to wonder, when they put them on that desk job, how much is he making them behind the scenes? What has he done for them behind the scenes to be able to keep himself from being crucified.
Well,
that's
the conspiracy theory thing.
I know that, but
take care of a cop, you know. So we get all that. A cop's always going to take care of a cop. Ed, go ahead. You were saying something.
Well, that's what I was saying too. This guy's a top performer. He's bringing in, you know, whether you're the county prosecutor, the chief of police, or whatever, or just the precinct, you know, the head of the captain of the precinct. This guy's a performer. He was bringing in, you know, a lot of stuff out there. They do, you know, budget cuts and everything are prevalent in all sectors of public, you know, the public sector. Guys bringing in the money, big times. Just like cops that go out and nail a big drug bust that, and there happens to be $250,000 there. you gotta wonder if it's like, hey, you know, you get an attaboy and you get a couple free passes or something when you produce. Which, you know, again, that's not what law enforcement's about. It's not about producing, but it's about, you know, it's about protecting and defending the public. But, you know, let's plain say this guy, no beans about it. He was a producer as far as the money coming in was.
Well, that's what they want. I mean, that's the whole thing. Anybody says there's not a quota, you know, we've had Sergeant Rob Chabot, or former Sergeant Rob Chabot, on air with us quite a few times, and, you know, he's retired LMPD. You know, and there's people that say there's not quotas. Their job is to protect and defend or protect and serve or whatever. They're not revenue producers. You know, Sergeant Chapman has pointed out on more than one occasion that, yes, they are. Nowadays, that's all it's about. It's not about doing the job the right way. It's about how many tickets you can put in, how many people you can arrest and produce money to justify taxes. But I do find it interesting, though. Here you've got a guy now who's being paid $52,000 a year, and he's working desk duty. I bet I can find a secretary to work a lot cheaper than that, since we're talking about budgets and all. Let's move on a little bit here, because I tell you, there's one thing. You know, I am very, very critical of Mayor Greg Fisher, and there's no secret there. I think he's a joke. I think he's always going to be a joke, but every great now and then you find something that you can agree on, and it turns out we did. The city is now putting access to details about just about every government-owned piece of land and building in Louisville. They're going to go ahead and put this on a website. The website is called... You can go to it at beta.opportunityspace.org is the database. But essentially what this is, the city has partnered up with this Opportunity Space thing, and they've created this online database that's going to publish any and all publicly owned property. And that's actually a good thing, because what I see a lot, or what I've seen to this point in this city, is that if you want to find property, I mean, if you want to do a property search for a vacant piece of property and try to track down ownership and everything else, because you might be interested in maybe buying it or rehabbing, it's almost impossible unless you know somebody in real estate or you know how to work the system. And it took me 2 years to kind of get that curve. So, you know, I think this is a great thing. We're finally going to have an open database. What do you guys think?
I think it's awesome. I mean, honestly, I've tried to look for land and I've looked for houses, things like that. It is such a pain even trying to look for building to start your own business, a club or anything like that. It's hard to find anything that's for sale, and even when you do find it, you don't know who owns it, you don't know what it's zoned as, you don't know anything about it. It's a pain. It's a good thing. It's a good thing to see this database put together so that people in Louisville can actually find what they're looking for.
Well, I agree with that, Ed.
Yeah, well, I think it's absolutely a good idea, and it's one that's way overdue. When you look at the number of vacant homes in the city, you know, there are a lot of people out there who will buy those homes, especially if they can get them on the cheap, you know, rent them out in Section 8. Yeah, but they can rehab them. You know, what they do with them afterwards, that's not as big an issue of what they, you know, how you can get hold of it. And that's one of the things that you see, you know, gosh, we could go off on a tangent about the collateralized debt obligations and the mortgage-backed securities. You know, trying to figure out who owns a home. You know, who does the city own, say, you know, who does the government say owns a given home? Is it, you know, how convoluted is it? What are the tax bills on it? Is the city going to get it? Why, you know, it's like if somebody like John or anybody for that matter is out looking at a property, you literally could burn 2 years just trying to figure out who the hell owns it, you know, who you've got to send legal papers to, who you would buy it from, how you would make an offer on it, anything.
true.
By then, the roof starts leaking, the mold sets in, and the house isn't worth crap and has to be bulldozed.
Well, you know, I mean, you can use the PVA, the Property Valuation Administrator website for, you know, land like my house would list there. But this is essentially going to cover all the government-owned pieces of land and building in Louisville. And that's always been the hardest rub is because, you know, you get downtown. People don't understand how many properties the government actually owns that they can't get rid of or that they're sitting on or for whatever reason, you know, like back taxes or revenue and all the different things. So making this information accessible to the public would help the small developers or the small investor. You know, you can go to a neighborhood where you've got, I don't know, four or five shotgun houses side by side, you know, and make a bid on that and get it really cheap because the government had to take it over due to defaulted taxes. And maybe you can bulldoze those and build a multiplex apartment building, you know, something. But it's going to make it easier,
yeah.
And it shifts the revenue generator for the city. So as much as I think Greg Fisher is an idiot, and I don't like him at all, every now and then, you know, blind squirrel finds a nut, and this is one of those things we can definitely agree on. We're going to take a quick break.
That falls into the category of welcome to the 21st century, because for like $7 a month, you can pretty much log on to a, you know, realty sites that'll clue you in on all the stuff that's, you know, owned by everybody but the government. But, you know, it's like, hey, great, you got hold of somebody's web developer that did it for the private sector, and you finally got around to doing it for the public sector.
There you
go. We'll take it.
Well, don't forget, guys, you can register at beta.opportunityspace.org. It says register, so I don't know if there's a charge for that or not, but I doubt it. If it is, it'll be minimal, like the $5 a month. But if you're somebody who's looking to invest, you know, $60 a year ain't going to kill you, and it also helps with our tax basis. So there you go. We're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we'll move on to a few other things. We got a lot going on with Allison Leonard and Grimes right now, and man, I hate to say it, but you know, I warned everybody about Matt Bevin a long time ago, and I think I'm going to be proven right. We'll get into why when we get back. Listen to the Ed Spreckster Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. Stay tuned.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
Number is 858-683-1326. Or you can reach us on our local number at 502-805-0334. And if you guys are in the listening queue, as always, we appreciate you being there. So make sure you hit that number one on your dial pad and so we can get you on air as soon as possible. You know, going into break, we were talking about the police. We're talking about the city of Louisville. You know, the biggest race going on this year, as we all know, we continue talking about, is the Senate race with the current McConnell. Yesterday, of course, we talked about this this liberal poll that shows Allison Lundgren Grimes beating Mitch McConnell by 4 points, which is a joke. But anyway, the thing is, now there's a big deal because former President Bill Clinton is going to headline a fundraising event for Allison Lundgren Grimes at the end of the month. I believe it's February 25th. So they're trying to act like this is some kind of a big Democratic coup. For the people who really pay attention and know what's going on, Jerry Lundgren, which is Allison Grimes' dad, has been a longtime friend of the Clintons. He was also chairman of Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign in Kentucky back in 2008. So this isn't the coup and a big deal everybody wants to do. It's just one friend helping out another. You know, do you think Bill Clinton really matters?
Yeah, I do. I think he's the last Democrat president to win Kentucky. As far as is mobilizing the Democrat base, absolutely he matters. I mean, because he's the one that they can hold up, whether it's in most cases it's number jockeying and stuff, but it's that had a balanced budget or close to it, you know, had a small deficit. They're the one that modern Democrats hold up, just like for a long time they would hold Kennedy up. So he's their living version of Kennedy. So as far as mobilizing and energizing the Democrat base, oh, yeah, I'd say Clinton is that's, you know, even though we know it's more of a payback than a Bill Clinton really supports Allison Lundgren Grimes kind of thing, it's more political payback. It's still a big momentum pickup for Allison Lundgren Grimes, who, you know, at least I would imagine more people know Bill Clinton's coming in on her behalf than know much of anything about the policy she's coming up with.
I'll get into why I disagree in just a second. Go ahead, John.
I'm actually going to disagree on this too, oddly enough. I don't think he matters at this point because I think the people that would care what Bill Clinton thinks wouldn't be voting for Mitch McConnell anyway. And I think that Bill Clinton, when I grew up, I used to have a lot more praise for him. And I do think he was a good leader, great leader, and he was a good president. He did a few things that had kind of screwed things up. I mean, you look at Glass-Steagall and everything that was manipulated after he left office. There's so many other things that have gone along with him, but I think he was effective in how he dealt with other nations, how he led us on the whole, and we had a surplus when he left office. He was a good man, but I don't think that it's at this point after everything that's happened. When you look at party politics, and that's what I've grown to realize as I've gotten older. He was a politician, just like every other one of them.
Well, they're all politicians,
and they once they pass a certain point, once you get a few presidents later down the road, some of what he did is almost forgotten about. People don't, you know, pay attention as much.
You know, well,
and the other thing is, like I said, if you have somebody who's already opposed to Mitch McConnell ideologically, somebody who would agree with something Bill Clinton had to say, I don't think him coming out in support of Grimes is really going to make a difference on whether or not they were going to vote for Mitch McConnell.
Well, there's a reason that I set it up that way for both of you guys. I'm interested to hear your comments, and we'll start with Ed when I get done. But, you know, Allison Lundgren Grimes' campaign has been just beating the hell out of Mitch McConnell for his voting record on women's issues. She is making women's issues, you know, and as a female candidate, I understand, but she wants to make women's issues a major part of her campaign. And I can see why, because she doesn't know about anything else. But when we look at this, though, the reason that this becomes an issue is, you know, the Republican Party of Kentucky right now is calling for Allison Lundgren Grimes to return a campaign contribution from former state rep Democrat John Arnold. Everybody in Kentucky knows that Arnold resigned because he had sexual harassment allegations, and that he had assaulted three state house employees. So here's the thing. Allison Lundgren Grimes is trying to beat Mitch McConnell up over women's issues, and she's gladly taking campaign contribution from somebody like Democrat John Arnold, who resigned because of sexual harassment allegations. She's gladly bringing Bill Clinton in here, who was impeached for Monica Lewinsky's sex scandal and all the other stuff. He had Linda Tripp and everything else, Jennifer Flowers, everything else. So clearly, she wants to say that women's issues and wants to stand up for women's rights is this big thing for this campaign, and she's surrounding herself with sexual, deviant, powerful males. Am I missing something here? Is this majorly hypocritical, Ed?
I think what you're missing is that Democrats don't care, and that women's issues is code for abortion rights.
Okay.
I think it's that simple. I think when it comes to Bill Clinton, they don't care. When it comes to John Arnold, they've already forgotten his little, you know, redneck ass slapping name. And when it comes to Woody Allen. That's another one that they're trumping up. Everybody looks at him as a weird New Yorker. They don't relate, you know. They don't relate or don't care. So I think the Republicans, you know, and I know Rand Paul's been trying to make some hay with it. I think they look silly trying to do it because it doesn't affect the people. They don't connect with half the people they're naming, and they don't know a number of the people they're naming, and then they don't care about Bill Clinton. They've shown that over and over. People don't care. They still like the guy.
John?
Yeah, I agree with that part 100%. And I'll say that when it comes to politicians, first of all, it's what comes first, money. Money is what's important. So if they're going to get donations from these people, their history or what they did or anything else, they don't care if it's against their principles, because their principles aren't really their principles. Their principles are their party's principles. Their principles are what they're trying to sell. They don't have any principles of their own. If they do, they're not showing them. They're trying to represent something, and living up to it isn't so easy. So when you put yourself in a position like this where you take money from people like that, and again, like Ed said, they don't care about Clinton. They still, he's well-received, he's well-liked, because at the end of the day, when you're an effective leader, your personal life is your personal life to an extent. And they'll hassle you about it, they'll hound you about it, and people will try to make you look like a bad guy. But on the whole, if you're not hurting anybody else with your personal life and you're running the government effectively, it's a minimal issue.
Well, see, there's a lot more to it to me, though, because... You know, when I look at this particular situation, I mean, you know, Allison Lundgren Grimes was asked, about whether Arnold should have stepped down last year, you know, and she became strangely silent. And because she kept her mouth shut, then she was rewarded with this campaign donation, is the way I look at it. And the problem for me is this. If Allison Lundgren Grimes wants to run as a strong woman, then she's going to have to step out there and stand up against sexual harassment and all the inappropriate behavior that goes on in the workplace. If she wants to be a strong woman in a campaign and she wants to say women's issues, and that might be code word for abortion, but, you know, we have all kinds of things that the legislature talks about every year in regards to sexual harassment, rape, all the other things that go along with that. So, you know, and she's not standing up for any of that because she's keeping her mouth shut about John Arnold and taking his money. So I guess what I'm getting at is this. If she wins her primary, and all indications are that she will quite handily, you know, this is going to be a major issue that she's handing to Republican Mitch McConnell to use against her. You want to claim your four women's issues. You want to claim you don't like sexual harassment. You want to claim all these things go along with women's issues.
I had that situation.
You surround yourself with the former president of the United States, who's a sexual deviant, and a former powerful person in the state legislature who's a sexual deviant. How does that stand up for Kentucky? Go ahead.
What is women's issues? What is this supposed to mean? I don't understand.
Women's issues is a code word for anything to say, hey, I'm a woman.
But it could be a code word. That's what I'm saying. It could be a code word for anything. I don't know. That women's issue. Well, there's men's issues. There's women's issues. There's white issues. There's black issues. There's all kinds of issues. We're all supposed to be on some sort of equal playing field. When I hear statements like that, I hear somebody say, I care more about women than I care about men. when they say that I care about women's issues, and I don't mean to minimize that things happen, or of course things happen to women, but it's almost to negate that anything could ever happen to a man. When you make a statement like that, it's just, I support women's issues. You have to elaborate. You can't leave it at that. There are a million, are you talking about your menstrual cycle? I don't understand what women's issue is being presented here. I need to know this to be able to determine whether or not you're an intelligent person who should be able to.
Well, but that's okay, because Alison London Grimes is not intelligent. She can't hold a candle to anybody.
I don't even want to make that prejudgment. I would want her to elaborate and explain herself so that I can understand where she's coming from.
Go ahead, Ed.
Well, I tell you what John said, you know, it's all about money. That's absolutely true. But to me, the biggest and the saddest thing about this, and it gets back to the Uniparty. Listen to what we're talking about. Listen, and we're basically talking about it because we know they're going to talk about it a lot, you know, come the campaign. Rand Paul is already, you know, an elected guy, but he's making a bit of an idiot out of himself out there trying to trump this up. It's like, guys, again, Bill Clinton did what he did. People don't seem to mind it too much. Nobody knows who Arnold is, and Woody Allen is kind of a weird little guy. They don't care. You know what? And it doesn't have squat to do with somebody getting a good paying job, health care, not losing their house. Let's not start another war. Deterioration of First Amendment rights, Second Amendment rights, Fourth Amendment rights, Fifth Amendment rights. It doesn't have anything to do with that, but the Uniparty can't wait to make this stupid little, for the most part, your own damn business kind of activity, they cannot wait to make it a campaign issue while people are losing their houses and people can't get good jobs and people are going to get, you know, they're scratching their head, they're losing their insurance with Obama, all these other crap that's going on. This is what they're going to talk about. And the political parties and the political elites and the advertisers can't wait for it because they're going to spend so much money. They're going to raise so much money. The campaigns, the ads that run on TV are just going to be mind-numbing. So the TV people and the newspaper people are going to love it.
Yeah, but
it's
going to
help anybody.
Well, let's be clear here, though, because the only reason it's an issue at all is because Alison London and Grimes is making it an issue by continuing to talk about these so-called shadow women's issues. She's the one who is screaming that Mitch McConnell doesn't care about women. She's the one who's screaming that Mitch McConnell has a lousy voting record on women's issues. So she's the one that continues bringing these women's issues up. Well, if you're going to stand for that, women's issues, generic term there, part of women's issues is sexual harassment in the workplace, rape and all the other things. And here she is, taking money from two people who have violated women in the worst way possible. So that's the only reason it's an issue. It's not Mitch McConnell making it an issue. It wasn't the Republicans.
I had to disagree. I don't think it's in the worst way possible. What Monica Lewinsky did was kind of voluntary. But when it comes to Grimes on this, I think it's a matter of, she doesn't care. She outright doesn't care. She's allowed to make the statement. Here's what I'm trying to get out. I don't want it to sound the wrong way. That's why I'm thinking about this. She is a young woman talking about an old man. How can she hit him? How can she hurt him? Oh, well, say he doesn't support women's issues. Well, he's an old white man who's been in Congress forever who has clout. He must not support women. This guy, he's ancient.
Well, no,
he
his
must
voter
not
record.
Support women.
I mean, let's be clear
and
here.
It's an easy jab. It doesn't matter what his voter record is. Here's the thing. This is the new age when it comes to elections and things like this. People are keeping up with the last 5 minutes. The last 5 minutes. What's being said in the last 5 minutes? So all she has to do is come out and say he doesn't support women's issues. And even looking at the polls, it's already saying this is a nobody from nowhere. They're looking for any excuse to not go after Mitch McConnell. She says one thing, he doesn't support women's issues. And boom, all of a sudden she's in the lead, just like that. So, you know, you have to consider it's an easy thing to do. It might not even be so deep-seated or so anything really other than a campaign maneuver, a political maneuver, just like any other, to say he's an old white guy. He doesn't support anything dealing with women.
Well, let's be clear here, too, though. You know, Bill Clinton was not impeached for having sex with Monica Lewinsky. Bill Clinton was impeached for perjury for lying about it under oath. And that's what people have to think about.
That's the thing. I mean, I understand wanting to hold our leaders to a higher standard, but who admits it?
I'm not saying that.
Especially when you're the president and you have your wife sitting right next to you. I mean, he had to be scared out of his mind. Wait a minute.
We're talking.
This is the way I look at it when I think about that situation. I think that he was more scared of Hillary than he was of the American people and the American press. I think he was more scared of her to get caught than he was of lying straight into that camera. I think that was the biggest.
I don't think he cared one bit of deal about Hillary Clinton at all. I mean, let's face facts here. I mean, let's get real because I'm not going to keep this on Bill Clinton. We got a lot more to cover. But, I mean, the reality is the reason he got in trouble was lying under oath and committing perjury.
Oh, of course.
He took an oath. Right. That's the problem. You know, he wants to lie to his wife about his affair, fine, but it's like a court of law. When you go in there and you swear under oath under penalty of perjury that you're going to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but truth, and then you lie, you just committed a daggone legal problem.
But people lie to cover.
Yeah, Bill Clinton had a history with these women. He already got caught lying three or four other times. Like, What's one more? I want to get out of this, man. I don't want to spend this on Bill Clinton. I just thought it was interesting that Alison Lundigan Grimes was spending her time trying to defend women's issues and stuff, making women's issues the target here, and then she surrounded herself with two of the biggest scum, I think, in that category. Ed, we got to talk about Matt Bevin, man, because I tell you, WFPL is reporting that Matt Bevin had signed a letter praising the bank TARP bailouts. I believe that was back in 2008. And I tell you, it's really disturbing to me because as we talked about when Matt Bevin first announced, one of the biggest problems that I had with his candidacy was because he was being touted as a Tea Party conservative. And a Tea Party conservative doesn't believe in TARP bailouts, bank bailouts, or any of that stuff. And Matt Bevin had accepted bailout money in Connecticut for his insured business, his fault for not insuring his business. But when his uninsured business, Bevin Bell, burnt to the ground, he took government bailout money and handouts. At the same time, he was delinquent on taxes and all kinds of things. And that was a problem that I told you guys months ago was going to come back to haunt him. And I believe it just has. Bevin has been beating up Mitch McConnell for supporting the $700 billion TARP bailout in 2008 and using that as an excuse to replace Mitch McConnell. However, 6 years ago in 2008, he signed a document saying that TARP and the takeover of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac were positive developments for business leaders such as himself. This was reported in the Investors of Veracity Funds, and it was obtained by Politico. Our good friends at WFPL wants to put the story out. So, you know, here we go. Matt Bevin is the president of this fund. He puts out a letter praising the TARP bailouts and the takeover of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. But now that he's running for office, he wants to act like Mitch McConnell was wrong. He benefited from the money. What do you say, Ed?
Oh, I say anybody in the, you know, and that's one of the misgivings and why I haven't come out and, you know, not a huge fan of Mitch. But I can't seem to bring myself around to Bevin because he's in the finance sector, and as you may have seen recently, I've declared the finance and investment sector to be the second most parasitic life form next to the political class. So, let's face it, everything from, you know, when you have a libertarian pedigree and you look at central banking and you look at the zero interest rate policies, you look at the way that the U.S. The Federal Reserve is buying up all these junk assets from the banks and the finance industry, it basically at a market price. They're not discounting it severely. All the things they're doing, everything that's gone on, and the bailout, the fact that they haven't decreased the fractional reserve ratios, everything they've done, that this country's done since, literally since 1999, has benefited the finance sector, and they've essentially been subsidized. So I don't care if you're a banker, I don't care if you're a real estate agent, or if you're an investor, or what you are. Your industry is subsidized by inflation causing destructive and it basically creates moral hazard. Anybody can make money in the investment sector because government's going to cover your bets. So it's basically an entirely subsidized industry that Matt Bevin's a part of. Now, and I've met him, and he understands finance, and he understands the history of it. But, the fact of the matter is, he's benefited from everything. If Ron Paul stood against it, it went through anyway. You've kind of benefited from it. Well, like I say, it doesn't matter what it is. Every fiscal, regulatory, and central bank and policy we've come up with has benefited the finance sector. So, hell yeah, he's going to be on board with it.
Well, it always will. Let's go to the phones. I believe this might be our good friend Paul Holliger with Stop It. How are you,
good
sir?
Good day, gentlemen. Good day. Hey, I kind of like the fact that you're pounding a little bit on Matt Bevin because I think it illustrates yet again that the people of Kentucky, regardless of who comes out of the Republican primary, is not going to have a particularly good choice. Among the three of them, and that's Grimes, McConnell, and Bevin, those three combined make a great case for NOTA, N-O-T-A, which for those listeners who may not know what that means, none of the above. But sadly, in Kentucky, we don't have that kind of an option. We're stuck with whatever the two major parties decide, and the rules are so onerous that it's very, very difficult for a third party or independents to be able to compete on a level playing field. So NOTA would be a far better choice than Bevin, McConnell, or Grimes. NOTA.
Okay, in this particular race, we do have a third-party candidate, Ed Marshbury, but you're right. I mean, he doesn't have a legitimate shot here. He doesn't have a legitimate level playing field. I think that makes this evident. This is one of the things that we talked about at the very beginning when he first announced. And I told everybody that this smelled wrong. And what's really fascinating is, according to the WFPL article, Matt Bevin appeared on Glenn Beck's program and denied writing the letter and said signing it was a formality. And here's what he said. He said, that letter I did not write. I did not write any of the letters that were ever published as investment commentary. I was the president and chairman of the board. By SEC law, required to sign prospectuses that were sent. Now, here's the problem. The prospectus said that most of the positive developments have been government-led, such as the effective nationalization of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, the passage of the $700 billion TARP, and the Federal Reserve's intention to invest in commercial paper. These moves should help stabilize asset prices and help to ease constraints in the financial system. That's what the prospectus said. So Matt Bevin is trying to tell us that he only signed it because he had to by law. However, the WFPL story goes on to add that Bevin added a part that says the government actions to date have been reasonably swift and substantial. The Federal Reserve seems to understand the magnitude of the problem and the underlying issues involved. So that clearly shows that he did know what was written in there. He added a segment there along with another guy named Bandy, Daniel Bandy. He was the chief investment officer and vice president of the fund. So Matt Bevin and Daniel Bandy added that statement. So it clearly just made what he said on Glenn Beck's program another statement that really can't be believed. Is that correct?
I think what you just stated, Ed, backs up a lot of what Ed Martin just alluded to, and that is Bevin is part of the financial sector. He claims he had to sign it as a protocol, okay, which means he is following their rules. Everything that he does in the financial sector is not to benefit the average American. It's to benefit those.
Well, I get that, but the problem right now is, for me, he's running for office, and he's saying that he just signed it because it was a perfunctory thing to do, because that's what he's supposed to do, and he has no choices here. And Paul dropped off. I guess he hit a dead spot. He looked like he was on his cell phone. But it turned out that was a lie because he added his own personal comments to it. Right, Martin?
Yeah, and like I said, I hadn't read it, but when you read it, you basically said what I said. to translate it into a more warehouse language, it's like, God, you know, look, all the bailouts, all the stuff that you've done, all the buybacks. I'm glad that note covered the buybacks that I covered, you know, off the cuff. But he said basically everything the federal government has done has benefited us greatly. Thanks. That's basically what the letter said. Hey, it's been great for us. Appreciate it.
I don't think he necessarily said that it had been great. He said that they had been substantial. That would just mean a large amount. And he said that they, we'll read that last statement again. He said that they had been substantial. And
well, what he said,
in common man speak, it's like, hey, the bailouts and the zero interest rate and the buybacks of the crappy assets has really, it's really helped us out. Thanks. You know, and that's basically what he's saying.
I honestly think that when he says, I actually
would compliment the letter on, hey, guess what? It's being perfectly honest with us.
Well, yeah. I'll give you that. But I think that in the beginning, he starts out like everybody else. I'm opposed to this. I'm opposed to this. I'm opposed to the big government. I'm opposed to the big, mean government. And then when TARP passes through and the money's there to be had, I mean, like it was mentioned earlier, he already had money problems of his own. And I'm not going to throw a conspiracy theory out there. I just don't like the fact that his business burnt down, and that's when he ended up with it. But assuming that that was legit, which I'll give him the benefit of the doubt, assuming that that was legit.
No, that was legit.
I think that it's just human. Once the money's there to be had, the money was there for the taking. It's just so human at that point.
Well,
I opposed it. It passed. Hell, give it to me, fine. If you're going to shove it down everybody's throat, give it to me, because at the end of the day, there's a sense of arrogance that comes with these politicians. There's a sense of arrogance, and they think they can do the job better. So if the money goes to them, then they can improve things. That's what we hear every day, job creators. So this guy is in a position where he's opposed something, and they've passed it anyway, and he says, well, I'll take the money, I'll make the business, I'll be in charge, and I'll make sure everything's okay. So even it's an arrogance to it.
Matt Bevin is an arrogant guy, you know, and that's just the way it is. But, you know, in this particular case, I mean, you don't burn down a business when you're uninsured. You burn it down when you have insurance. So this wasn't an arson situation. But,
like I said, it's something that it was legit. I gave it
you
a
know, but, you know, there is a lot going on there. One quick thing before we get into closing arguments, because we just have a few minutes left here. You know who Mary Matlin is. Is that correct, guys? Mary Matlin, of course, is the wife of James Carville.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, James Carville, of course, was a predominant former Clinton advisor. Mary Matlin is a Republican consultant, so I don't think I'd want to live in their household, I can tell you that. Mary Matlin, of course, a Republican consultant. James Carville, of course, is close with the Clintons. But it's interesting because one of the questions we keep coming back to is Hillary going to run in 2016? And the reason that I bring this up is because Mary Matlin, who is one of the most noted Republican consultants, says that this so-called lead that Hillary Clinton has and he's so far out there polls will evaporate if she decides to get in the race. But she's going on record saying that she doesn't think Hillary's going to run, that this is all smoke and mirrors. What do you guys think?
Diversion. We don't have any ideas to talk about, so let's talk about something that doesn't matter. Really, Hillary Clinton has gone on statements on the record so many times saying that she wasn't running for office, that if she were to throw her hat into the ring at the last second, the Republicans would have about 5 minutes worth of ads with her in different outfits saying that she wasn't running for office. At this point, it's not even an issue. At this point, they're beating a dead horse over and over, saying, what are we going to talk about? Well, let's put the focus on Hillary Clinton and Obama and what a bad job they're doing, and let's keep talking about what a hypocrite Hillary is for saying that she's not going to run, and she's going to run, even though she hasn't declared that she's going
to
run yet.
Well, I actually like the smoke and mirrors thing because, you know, I mean, let's face it, as long as everybody's focusing on Hillary possibly running for president, that's less time they've got to talk about Barack Obama and his failures. Go ahead, Ed.
Well, I look at it a different way, and I don't mean to pick on old people because hopefully we'll all get there.
Sure,
but, you know, Bill was president, and by a lot of measures, he was a pretty good president. You know, most people seem to still like the guy. But that was 16 years ago. And there, you know, you look back, any of us look back at 16 years, and you're not any younger. And I mean, yeah, sometimes they'll airbrush a picture up and make Hillary look okay in a picture. But
tangles,
I'm looking at it more from the aspect that she's 16 to 20 years older than she is when they first started that. And at some point, I think she's just got to look at it like she doesn't want to put, you know, she's at the age, she's not going to put up with this crap. She's done it. And if she runs, she will forever be compared to Bill. They'll always be questioning whether Bill's pulling the strings from behind the scenes or, you know, giving her pointers or whispering her ear. I think the smoke and mirrors is going to come in as this, she's a prohibitive favorite. And for anybody else that might be eyeing it up, the price to get, you know, I think there's a potential for the Clintons to make an ass load of money off this thing, whether it's political consulting or she's just ramping her popularity up, hanging it out there like a carrot on the end of the stick, that, you know, she's a prohibitive favorite to be the next president, just makes her speaking engagement money go through the roof. I got to agree with Matt one. I don't think she's going to run. I think she's going to play it for everything she can. She's going to profit handsomely from it.
Definitely. And I think you prove a good point with Bill pulling the strings, because even with when Bill was in office, you have people to this day that say, was Hillary pulling the strings on this and that when he was in office? Because of what happened with the business deals in China overseas with Walmart and Hillary's influence with that, and a few other things that happened with Glass-Steagall that we don't have time to get into.
Well, at this point, we're going to run out of time. So let me just put one real quick thing out there. Because, you know, whether Hillary runs or not is really irrelevant to me anyway. Because we've still got to look at the Republican field. But, you know, we mentioned Bill Clinton, you know, was he a good president, great president or other? I personally thought that Bill Clinton was a fantastic president. And there's only one reason for that.
He united
because
people.
During Bill Clinton's presidency, the balance of power worked.
Thank
Bill
you.
Clinton
Thank
had
you.
To deal with Republican Congress, and he knew how to compromise or bring both sides together to make that happen. So during his term, you know, we had a great 8 years under Bill Clinton. But it's because government inaction sometimes is better than government taking any action. And that's what we had with that. So, I mean, I think Bill Clinton was a good president because with the balance of power set in place there, nobody could take control like we're seeing right now. We're getting ready to run out of time. Ed Martin, final thoughts.
Well, like I say, my final thought's going to be actually to go back to the Bevin thing. I don't go conspiracy or anything else on these type things. And these are behaviors to be expected from people. It's you know, sometimes I think they're arrogant and not. But most of the time, whether it's right wing or left wing, I think most people just they want to gore somebody's ox, but not their own. You know, we've seen this, and whether it's, you know, it's some right wing Tea Party type sits there and doesn't believe in government subsidies, but then you find out they sell real estate to where mortgage interest is deductible. Oh, don't touch my subsidy. You know, and I think Bevin just fell into that trap. He, maybe back then he didn't have political aspirations, and this was his subsidy. He knew damn good and well that this activity was pumping money into his industry, pumping liquidity into his industry. And you know what? Gore somebody else's ox. He's going to be, he could, you know, for all this, that, and the other. But, you know, this is good. People look at it like, this is good for me. I'm going to do it. You know, no harm will come from it. It's, you know, it's all good. This is my ox. Don't gore it. I think he just fell into the trap, and now it's come back to bite him in the ass.
There you go, John.
Well, I just want to go back to the national level. When you talk about federal Congress, the race with Mitch McConnell and all this, the problem that we have right now is the same problem that we've had for 50 years, and it's aside from the, when you're not just looking at the numbers and you're not just looking at the economy, it's the same families, the same people running things, and you look at these guys, these guys are not worried about repercussions. Is if they get busted, they hand things over to their son, or they hand things over to a friend of the family, or somebody else ends up in office. They've got enough money, they own the money. So it really is about the economy, but they own so much of the wealth that they're able to manipulate things. Like in this case, you've got Grimes, who nobody knew anything about, who has family ties, you know, everybody's friends with the Clintons, and they're able to dominate a race out of nowhere that you never even saw them in. And it's because of the fact that it's the same people shaking hands, the same families together, the same friends. They all know each other, and they're just passing the ball back and forth. I mean, that's really what it is. It's passing the power ball back and forth, and it's taking turns on who's going to make decisions this week.
Well, I tell you, you know, it's incumbents don't really have a lot of problems to worry about when they don't have strong people to go against them. And we've talked about this many times on the show.
When they don't have rich people to go against them as well.
When we've talked about this many times on the show, and we'll have more to talk about going forward, I'm sure. Tomorrow night, Dale the Truth is going to handle Wednesday night hosting instead of co-hosting on Wednesday nights for a while. Tomorrow night, he will have our favorite independent, Michael Lewis.
Yay.
We'll be joining him tomorrow, and should be a lively show. So make sure you tune in tomorrow night at 7. Dale will be here with Michael Lewis,
another
and I tell you, it's going to I tell you, it's going to get a little crazy, I'm sure. Don't forget Thursday night TNT, Thursday night Truth Radio with our good friend Dale the Truth, and Sunday night's Liberty Unbridled, of course, all shows are at 7 o'clock right here on the NVM Radio Network. In the meantime, folks, have a great night. We will talk to you later. Take care.